supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Forgiveness. Every one of the world's major religions advocates forgiveness, but we mostly hear about it from a religious context. In recent years, scientists have become interested in the concept of forgiveness, and as they continue to study it, we're learning a great deal about what happens to us when we forgive and what happens to us when we don't forgive. For example, holding on to resentment increases our risk for cardiovascular disease, hypertension, depression, insomnia, anxiety, and can even compromise our immune system. On the other hand, forgiveness can bring about healing. There's evidence that forgiveness can help marriages. It can help us move beyond a sense of victimhood. But sounds great on paper. How do we get there? Have you ever wanted to forgive someone but have been unable to? Or has someone injured you and you can't ever imagine forgiving them? You carry the hurt, you carry the anger with you. Or do you have trouble forgiving yourself? It's an open show today about forgiveness, and we want to hear your stories about forgiveness. Our number is 1-888-477-9499. I'll try that one more time. 888-477-9499 or 477-WHYY. Tell us about forgiveness in your life, in your childhood, in your marriage. And perhaps if you're seeking forgiveness, give us a call. But before we get to your calls, let's listen to an interview we taped earlier this morning with Dr. Robert Enright. He's a professor of human development at the University of Minnesota, and he's vice president of the International Forgiveness Institute. That's forgiveness-institute.org. Let's listen. Bob, how does one even begin to study the impact of forgiveness on mental health?
Well, first of all, one has to determine what forgiveness is. And there's a lot of misconceptions floating around. Many people think they know what forgiveness is, but actually confuse it with other important concepts like excusing or condoning or even reconciling.
Yeah, Webster defines it as letting go of resentment, that's all. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think Webster isn't a philosopher, and so what you get is a quite truncated, superficial view of an idea that has had the depths of it plumbed for centuries. And I think that's correct in part, but it's not nearly complete enough for us to truly understand forgiveness, because forgiveness is a merciful gift that you give to someone who's hurt you. And someone surely can get rid of resentment by letting the passage of time go by, or the other person makes up whatever the injustice was. But forgiveness is that courageous gift of not only giving up resentment, but offering compassion to another person who's hurt them.
Easier said than done.
Well, sure, it's easier said than done, but also being just to another when you can get away with something is also easier said than done, as we know since Machiavelli, who's told us we ought to do whatever we can to get our own advantage. So to be fair is hard, and to be forgiving is hard, but if we think about it, it's much harder to live with a resentment that can kill us than to take that courageous first step of offering goodness to someone who's hurt us.
When we think about the possibilities here. I mean, you and I have treated people who've been victims of horrible abuse, sexual, physical abuse, neglect, abandonment. You know, one thinks about Holocausts, past and present. How do you show compassion for people who have done inhumane things?
Well, let me give you an example. In 1995, Suzanne Friedman, who's a professor at the University of Northern Iowa, was my student at the time, and I decided to do a study to see if we could help incest survivors to forgive. It took us 1 year to garner our own courage to do that, because we expected people to perhaps picket in front of the Educational Sciences Building, where we are at the University of Wisconsin, in protest of something as horrific as asking incest survivors to forgive. And we finally realized that that was nonsense, because the published psychological literature shows that incest survivors are not helped very well emotionally in terms of their psychological well-being. And we thought we had something that could cut through that and give these courageous women lots of psychological healing. So we threw caution to the wind and randomized 12 women to either a forgiveness program that lasted over a year or to what we call a waitlist control group, who waited until their counterparts in the experimental group were done. And here's what we found. Meeting one-on-one, once a week for a full year, Suzanne Friedman helped each of these women to understand what forgiveness is, knowing that they're not condoning what that man did, knowing they're not necessarily reconciling if the man is still dangerous, but offering a gift of compassion toward him, not because of what he did, but in spite of it. And we found that after that 1 year, the women who came to us clinically depressed were non-depressed. They were anxious in clinical levels, and they became anxious on normal levels. Their self-esteem went up. Their sense of hope went up. And then when the control group started this program, the same thing happened. And in the entire published literature of scientific psychology, there has never been a stronger study of healing for incest survivors as that paper has indicated.
Let me back up a bit. I just wrote an article in our local Philadelphia newspaper suggesting that initial resentment after trauma, after injury, is really adaptive.
It is
a reaction. It's the flight or fight thing. It's
right.
You know, you wrap that shell around your heart, and you've got the illusion of safety. Hatred for other gives you a sense of safety
and empowerment. And sometimes one can use that in the short run to strike out for justice. But there's a fine line between justice and revenge. And there's a fine line between having that resentment in the short run and having resentment for 50 years. Some of these incest survivors with whom we worked were carrying this resentment for 40 years, and it was bringing them down. Their perpetrator probably, in many cases, could have cared less how they were feeling. Some of them wanted new jobs out of the city, and yet they were so depressed they couldn't do it. And so the resentment, sure, in the short run, might be quickening toward energy and toward forthright moving forward, but in the long run, it can kill us.
Well, it does seem to me that an act of forgiveness is an act of courage and an act of empowerment. The people I know and work with that hold on to resentment over the years, really over time, are putting themselves in a powerless position, because
that's right.
The other person there resenting always has more power.
Yeah, and if you think about it, what happened with our incest survivors once they said, I am going to look toward goodness toward this perpetrator, not because of what he did, but in spite of it. They increased in self-esteem and hope toward the future. They were able to move forward. In other words, they were empowered, and they took this into their own hands, not by being dominating over that man, but by being humble, by being quiet, by being giving. And that's the paradox of forgiveness. As you give quietly to the other who doesn't deserve it, you yourself are healed.
Let's talk a bit about forgiveness and marriage. I know there's a lot of research there.
Yes.
Tell us how that works, how it looks.
Well, there is a tendency for the little things in marriage that are resentful to build up to big things that are hateful. And it is astonishing how if we don't stop the little resentments, how they can build and become the leviathan of the marriage and destroy the marriage. So we recommend practicing forgiveness continually and with the little things in the marriage. And that includes giving of forgiveness and receiving it from one's partner. And a lot of times what we find is that people bring into the marriage the excess emotional baggage of the family in which they grew up. And so we urge people to actually begin looking toward their family of origin, seeing where the injustices are, and to forgive mom or dad or a brother or an uncle for the injustices that they're actually bringing into the marriage, so that they can argue well, so that they can love well, and in new ways, and not reproduce the unsavory, unhealthy patterns of their past.
So that leads me to the next step, and that's self-forgiveness. Most people I know, I work with, don't forgive themselves. Does it work the same?
I think we're harder on ourselves than anybody else. I think we exonerate and forgive other people long before we do the same for ourselves. So here's my advice in self-forgiveness. Whatever you offer to other people in forgiveness, a softness, a humility, a welcoming, do the same for yourself. But at the same time, self-forgiveness is more complicated because usually you're the one who perpetrated an unfairness, either toward yourself or others, and now you want to receive goodness. And so usually when we receive this goodness from ourselves, we also have to realize we're accountable to others and to go and seek forgiveness. Tell people we're sorry, because usually we don't offend ourselves in isolation from others. So see whom you have hurt and go to that person and apologize and then receive self-forgiveness.
Interesting. So tell us the first steps to forgiveness.
The first step is to humbly realize the other hurt you and that they do have a certain power over you because they're able to hurt you. Then to examine your reaction to that. And a lot of times people are stunned to realize how deeply angry they really are. A lot of times when we ask questions, how much energy do you spend during the day ruminating on this person and what they did to you? People are quite surprised if we say, well, on a 1 to 10 scale, if you have 10 points of energy, how many points of energy do you take up with this thing that might have happened 30 years ago? It's usually a significant amount, and that gets people's attention. And they realize that what happened to them is still living with them, and that person is still living inside them, and that's the motivator to now walk a forgiveness path as opposed to some other kind
and
of
what's
healing
And what's the next step?
The next step is to make a decision to go on that forgiveness path. And it's very important that people at that point examine what forgiveness is and what it is not. They're not going down a condoning path. They're not going down an excusing path. They're not going to throw justice out the window. They realize that they're going to try to get rid of resentment, offer some goodness, and if they still need some justice from the other person, they are indeed going to ask for that.
Can one go down this path if the other person is not available or accessible, even dead?
Well, if we think about what forgiveness is, which is my willing to offer goodness to another person who hurt me, I can do that whether they have abandoned me in this life and they're still alive, whether they're deceased, or whether they're living in the same home with me. It doesn't matter, because, see, to forgive is not to engage in a certain kind of behavior with another. It is not the same as reconciliation from a philosophical perspective. I can give a gift to anyone anytime I wish, but the interplay of coming back together again, finding our way back in reconciliation, requires two or more parties. Forgiveness requires one. It's my response, a moral response to the other who has hurt me. So I can forgive a deceased person. And in fact, one of the incest survivors did just that. She was Jewish, and she had a very tasteful ceremony of respect for her deceased father at the cemetery with her two sons. What was she doing as a gift? Giving a good name to her father within the family. And at the same time, giving a gift to her children because they got to reclaim Grandpa.
That's a powerful image, and I think we will end on that image. Bob Enright, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dan. Take care.
Dr. Robert Enright is a professor of human development at the University of Minnesota, but he's also vice president of the International Forgiveness Institute. You can find them at forgiveness-institute.org. It's an open show about forgiveness today, and our number is 888-477-9499. Our lines are busy right now, but keep trying. Let's go to Lisa. Lisa, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
I was calling because I would like some advice from you. My mother has borderline personality disorder. I've gone through counseling many times and am going through it again right now. I've had a hard time forgiving to get to the healing, so I was wondering if you could provide me some advice on how I can get to the healing, which is the good part.
What do you want to do?
You
use the word forgiveness. Translate
well,
it. What's that mean?
That is what my counselor is calling it. You know, the forgiveness exercise, the writing the letters, tearing them up, putting it all behind me.
Well, and I'm more interested in Lisa.
Okay.
So what do you want to do, Lisa?
I'm not quite sure. That's the problem. I guess I'd like my mother to stop being able to hurt me, excuse me.
So you want to protect yourself?
Yes.
I have a question. Is she hurting you now, or is your fear of your mother hurting you? Do you know?
I think it's both. Because my mother is still alive. I don't see her all the time. I'm with her for the holidays and a few times a year. She's retired and lives in Florida with my father. So there are times when we're together at the holidays that she still hurts me.
How so?
I'm not quite sure how familiar you are with a borderline, but she is extremely unpredictable. She has out-of-control rages. Her expectations are extremely high, and if I don't give her what she wants, even to this day, even though I'm well into my adult years, my father will come to me and tell me that I have to give her what she wants and tell her what she wants to hear so she can feel better about herself.
Well, Lisa, what I'm hearing is your mother's behavior and your father's collusion with her. But the question was, how does she hurt you? What hurts about that? That's her behavior. What happens to you?
There's no respect for me as a person.
So that's what hurts you, is you don't feel respected?
No, not at all.
Do you respect yourself?
I would say most of the time I do. But it's not 100%. I'm definitely not perfect.
Part of what I'm hearing is for another discussion is that you'll respect yourself 100% when you are perfect. good luck on that work. I wonder how old you feel when you're with your mother?
Like a kid.
Yeah.
Like a child.
Yeah. And obviously you are a grown woman. There's something about your presence in your mother's sphere that makes you younger, and that what that says to me is about power, that she has much more power when you're with her.
Oh, yes.
And she has much more power than she should.
Yes.
And she has much more power than she probably wants. Do you know why she does what she does?
Well, having read a certain amount about borderline personality disorder, it's all because she had trauma in her life, and I won't even go into the dysfunctional family that she came from, but there were lots of dirty secrets, including incest in the family.
Do you have a feel for whether or not your mother suffers?
Yes, I think she does. Because I think she avoids a lot of feelings, which is very typical with a borderline.
Do you, when, Do you have a feeling that she feels regret about what she's done?
I'm not quite sure because she has a lot of dissociation in her past, so she doesn't remember many things. In fact, I've even tried to confront her about situations, and she has absolutely no recollection.
Are you still somehow fighting to get her to be the mother you want, need?
Maybe.
As I listen to you, I'm wondering if you are in a relationship with the mother you want, who's acting inappropriately, rather than being in a relationship with a mother who's got mental illness, who's got a chronic disability that takes this form.
That's probably correct.
And what if you were in a relationship with a mother who had a disability, a pretty significant mental disability, and these were her symptoms, just as if she had seizures or Tourette's or whatever she had?
I think if she had a physical illness that people could recognize, it would be out in the open. My mother's mental illness is a family secret.
Well, we're not talking about people, though. We're talking about you. And the work you have to do is to understand her humanity. Understand that she suffers. And be willing to open up your heart to her. If your heart is closed and you're trying to turn her into somebody she's not and failing over and over, you're giving her power. You're giving her power that she doesn't need and that she doesn't want. If you can see her as a woman with a chronic illness and feel some compassion for her, it'll shift the power and you'll be older in that relationship. She can't hurt you, Lisa. She can't hurt you. What hurts you is your fear and your resentment. Begin to be in a relationship with the woman she is rather than the woman you want her to be. And P.S., I'd love to see you do that for yourself.
Well, thank you very much. I think that's very good advice. And you're right, I do have a closed heart.
Yeah, things begin to necrose when our heart stays closed too long.
Good.
Lisa,
well, thanks
for your call.
Thank you.
And I wish you the best.
Thank you. Bye.
We have to take a short break now. We'll come back with your calls. It's an open show about forgiveness. Our number is 888-477-9499. When we come back, I want to tell you a personal story, something I just realized, something that happened to me 27 years ago from a friend, and I just realized today that I've never forgiven him. Well, we'll be back after a short break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY. 91 FM.
Penn supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify may receive an initial examination and treatment with an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 12 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Maggie Gyllenhaal. Her films include Secretary, Happy Endings, World Trade Center, and Stranger Than Fiction. She was nominated for a Golden Globe for her role in the independent film Sherry Baby, coming out soon on DVD. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
I'm Dan Gottlieb, and you're listening to Voices in the Family. Today's an open show about forgiveness, all the dimensions of forgiveness. Before we went on our break, I promised to tell a story about of my own, of lack of forgiveness that I just realized. It was right after my accident 27 years ago. My best friend. He and I were great buddies, racquetball buddies and golf buddies and